You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Culture Map presents... What's Eric Eating? From the Gal Media Studios in Houston, Texas, here's Culture Map food editor Eric Sandler.
Welcome to What's Eric Eating, Culture Map's weekly look at all things Houston restaurants. I'm your host, Culture Map food editor Eric Sandler. We have Jonathan Levine from Jonathan's The Rub coming up in a little bit. But first, I'm joined this week by my frequent co-host, good friend, local restaurant consultant Nathan Ketchum. Nathan, welcome back to the show. How are you?
I'm doing well. I see a good friend is back in the title.
Good friend is back. You didn't blow me off for, I don't know, whatever you did last time that had me snub you as good friend.
All right. Yeah, I don't know what it was. I probably did it on purpose.
You probably did. All right, let's start. Let's dive into the news of the week, starting with another friend of ours, Lee Ellis, one of the founders of Cherry Pie Hospitality. He founded that restaurant group a couple of years ago after leaving Feed Texas, the company behind Liberty Kitchen. When he did that, he took two restaurants into that group with him, Petite Sweets, the dessert shop in Upper Kirby, and Lee's Fried Chicken and Donuts in the Heights. Since he did that, they have opened three more restaurants, Pie Pizza, Starfish, and State Fair. And then last week it came out that Lee is no longer an employee of Cherry Pie Hospitality, but he is still a shareholder. As I said, we know Lee pretty well. We dine with him on a semi-regular basis. I was very surprised by this news. And so, Nathan, I'm just going to throw it to you. What do you think about the prospects of Cherry Pie Hospitality without Lee Ellis as a key contributor to it?
The news was very surprising. Obviously, we know Lee well. We spend, you know, we dine out with him. Love to hear his opinion on things. Love to hear him complain about everything. That is his personality. It was a giant surprise. It's not something that I had any information about ahead of time, which is one of the reasons why it was such a surprise, obviously. But the restaurants that are currently here in Houston, I think Lee and Jim has set them up. They've set them up for success. I think they're going to be able to continue to operate and do well. They have great reputations. They've operated well. They've built up a lot of goodwill in their communities. So even without Lee and his eye for, you know, making sure things are done well, done perfectly, I think they'll still be able to do well. They won't be able to operate in that kind of, you know, fashion where every little nook and cranny is perfect, but they're set up to function without him, and I guess that is in part to how good Lee set them up.
Yeah, I think that is an important point. You know, Lee certainly has an eye for talent. He has put talented people in place both in the kitchen and in the front of the house. Especially at Starfish and at State Fair. And Chris Vestal, the CEO of Cherry Pie Hospitality, who talked to me, said, you know, we're not disregarding Lee's contributions to the company. We're going to maintain his standards. And if, as you alluded to, Jim Mills, who is the COO of Cherry Pie Hospitality, I didn't know that was Jim's title until last week, but he is the head of culinary, certainly. He is still involved with the company, and so he's there to maintain the standards in the kitchens. I do think it's certainly a loss for Cherry Pie, Lee has been the face of their restaurants, really. He's been their media contact. He's, you know, there's, he is enshrined in neon in front of Lee's Fried Chicken and Donuts. And his design aesthetic informs the look of the other three restaurants. So I'm with you. I think this is a loss, but I don't think it's fatal by any stretch of the imagination. I think the Cherry Pie concepts can continue, and that there are key people in place at all the restaurants who can maintain standards and keep the quality up.
Yeah, the potential growth for the company has changed. The growth arc has changed drastically. Any future concepts to open within Cherry Pie will be a completely different concept, a completely different beast. If they open another state fair, which I know aspirations to open multiple state fairs was something the company was looking at, they will be a different restaurant than the original state fair. Lee's aesthetic, something you just mentioned, was very specific and something that was very unique to every restaurant, and that won't be something that would be included. They may try to just mimic the original state fair, and that's not something that Lee would have done. He would have tried to make it unique to each location and to what he was feeling at the time, and it's something that's always succeeded for him. The you know, his staffing abilities. He's I've never worked for the guy. Obviously, he's supposed to be a hard guy to work for, but also a rewarding guy to work for. He demands a lot of his employees, but can bring the best out of them from understanding, from talking to previous employees. I've never had to work for him or never had the ability to work for him. So, you know, this is just, you know, secondhand knowledge here. But
right. But you would.
Yeah, in certain capacities, I would work for Lee. We may yell at each other a lot, but I think that would probably get a really good product at the end of the day.
Yeah, in terms of their local growth, Lee had been talking about opening a barbecue concept called Ellis Brothers. There'd been some talk about a Lee's Creamery on 19th Street in the Heights. As far as I can tell, those plans are on hold or maybe not going to come to fruition. And I should clarify, Lee has not been willing to discuss why this happened, why he's no longer with Cherry Pie. Cherry Pie certainly isn't saying either. Hopefully when he's ready to talk about his next move, because I don't think this is the last we've heard of Lee Ellis. No matter what happens with the future of Cherry Pie, I feel like he's still probably got some plans that he wants to bring to fruition somewhere down the road.
Yeah, Lee's not the type of guy to sit around and do nothing. He's already out in Round Rock kicking up dust and working the door at...
Over for Bud Royer at Royer's Round Top Cafe. So if you go there, you might see Lee out front instead of Bud Royer.
Yeah, Round Top. I'm sure we will see him again, whether it is in Houston or a different city. Not sure about that. I have a feeling it will be Houston, but... again, I think a lot of things are going to have to play out first. I have absolutely no concrete clue as to what happened, why he's not with the company. I will have lunch with Lee soon and hopefully figure that one out.
Oh, good. You'll have to report back.
Yeah. But I'm sure we'll have another Lee Ellis concept soon. The fact that Lee's Creamery is not opening, at least in its iteration that should have or would have been opening soon, I think is a detriment for the ice cream aspects of Houston, because those are some delicious ice cream.
Yeah, we are regular Petite Sweets customers. We are regular consumers of the Lee's Creamery ice cream, and to have had a dedicated ice cream shop with Sundays and milkshakes and banana splits and all that would have been a lot of fun. But I don't think it, my understanding of the current situation is that is not going to happen, at least not at the location in the Heights that they had selected for it. So we will see what the future is for Lee and for Cherry Pie, but it's certainly one of the more surprising personnel moves. I'd say at least since Danny Trace left Brennan's and maybe even farther back than that.
Yeah, and like you said, Lee's Fried Chicken and Donuts, it's literally has his name in it. and he's enshrined in neon outside. There's a giant Lee in neon, bearded, black, you know, wearing knee Lee in neon. I mean, what are they going to do with that? That's just, I have no clue what's going to go on with that.
Yeah, I think that's there.
Now they're just going to say, hey, it's that ZZ Top guy instead of.
That's right.
Yeah.
It's not Billy. Who's the one?
Dusty, right?
Right. Not Dusty.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's move on. Better news. Pizarro's, one of our favorite places for pizza. They have two locations, one in Montrose and the original in the Memorial area. Since the Montrose store opened, they have changed it to be not just Neapolitan pizza, but also to add a deck oven with New York style and Detroit style pizza, two styles I really enjoy. But the Memorial store was not big enough to add an oven. So they are going to relocate to a new spot on the Katy Freeway. It's about a mile and a half from their current Memorial location that will allow them to run the same menu at both restaurants. Nathan, I'm not sure there's a whole lot to say about this other than that it's really good news for people who live in the Memorial area and like eating good pizza.
Yeah, I think it's a good decision on them on two sides. One, it's always smart for restaurants to consolidate their menus, have the same menu at all locations. And then two, I know they've been having trouble with construction, just continually kind of draining their business, people having problems getting into their locations. And then I guess I can add three, delivery. I know that they've had a lot more luck with the delivery aspect of pizza with the New York and Detroit styles. Pizza is more deliverable, and people prefer them in delivery terms rather than the Neapolitan style pizza.
Yes, Neapolitan pizza really doesn't travel well. Basically, you want to eat that as soon as it comes out of the oven.
Yeah, the Fino pizza at Pizarro's, if you hadn't have it, it's delicious. It's probably the best pizza in the city. I know you really like the Detroit style pizza there. You like that, you know, crispy cheese crust.
I do. I like that burnt cheddar crust. Yeah.
But I can't get over that Fino.
What is the Fino?
I think it's goat cheese, another type of cheese. Now that you asked me, I'm not going to be able to tell you exactly what it is.
Right.
But it's just.
It's one of the Neapolitan pies.
Yeah, it's one of the Neapolitan ones. It is delicious. They also have a smoked, like a smoked Gouda one that's really great. I don't remember the name of that one. But again, I really like their New York style one because it's more of like, hey, I'm just, when I think of what a pizza is, I think of New York style pizza.
Right. A kind of, you know, a round pie, like a crust of medium thickness.
Yeah. With pepperoni or, right. You know, Italian sausage, things like that. So those pizzas, being able to do all three makes them really cool, makes them a unique style pizzeria in Houston, especially. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, as far as I know, they're the only pizzeria in Houston that serves Detroit style. And most of the other places that serve Neapolitan don't serve an additional style. So it gives them a diversity that I don't think another pizzeria in Houston matches.
Yeah, they're serving three really unique styles, and they do it all well. All three of them, they're doing very well. So the fact that they can do that now in their Memorial, which was their original location, I know they have a really strong following over there, I think will be really great for them.
Yeah. Timing's a little bit uncertain. They're still in the design and permitting phase, but hopefully by the end of the year, the new location will be ready.
And the children are running the stores now, not...
Yeah, I mean, Bill Hutchinson, the person who started it, is still involved. He was there when I went there, but his daughter, Nicole Bean, her husband, Brad, and his son, Matt, are basically in charge of the day-to-day.
Yeah, I think they alluded to the fact that they run it. They let the dad hang around and pretend to run things. Obviously, he started everything. He knows what he's talking about. But it was time to let the kids take over. The daughter has all the certifications, correct?
Yeah, she's been to the pizza school in California, so she's the master recipe developer, and when I was there with a couple friends of ours for lunch and to conduct this interview, she made us the pizza that she competed with at the Pizza Expo in Las Vegas, which was a deep dish Detroit-style pizza with a Nutella in the dough, topped with ricotta, candied kumquat, and a chocolate balsamic drizzle that was absolutely killer. A dessert pizza, but a very balanced dessert pizza in terms of its flavor and sweetness.
I believe you that that tasted good. I'm not sure I would ever order that, but I believe you that that tasted good.
Well, it's kind of a one-off. It's not yeah. likely to appear on the menu, but it can be ordered in advance for anyone who's listening to this and wants to try it. You just, I'm not even sure. I'm not, give her a couple of days. It had a 48-hour fermentation.
Oh.
But
if you want to order a competition dessert pizza, there you go.
Yeah, it takes a little bit of doing, but it can be done. All right, let us move on. Houston is the city of a million steakhouses. We've discussed this many times before, but there are still people who see opportunity for more, including a Denver chef named Troy Gard. He is bringing his Gard and Grace Steakhouse to the Allen Center downtown sometime next year, summer of 2019. But it was announced last week. It looks good. The pictures look good. The food looks good. It's apparently very successful in Denver. There are no shortage of steakhouses downtown. I mean, just off the top of my head, there's Morton's, Three Forks, Shula's, Pappas Brothers, Vic and Anthony's. Probably missing one or two. So certainly, and B&B Butchers is right down the street from downtown. So certainly Garden Grace enters a competitive steakhouse market. But, you know, Nathan, we seem to have a limitless capacity for steak in this town.
Yeah, you know, when I look at the Houston restaurant market to see what gaping hole is missing, a giant steakhouse in downtown is, that's blatantly what needs more, you know, we need more of. Not, you know, a great sandwich restaurant, not more Italian restaurants, not, you know, a Creole seafood restaurant, not anything like that. We need a giant downtown fancy steakhouse. Because that's what we're missing, and this city is more meat, more steak, more everything. I'm super excited. If you can't tell by the tone of my voice,
you're laying it on pretty thick. I think people understand.
Okay, just wanted to get that across.
But you know, we've been recently to Dory Metropolitan in River Oaks, a steakhouse that does things a little bit differently in terms of its sides and starters. A meal that we both enjoyed very much, I would say. A restaurant I would go back to.
I love Doris. The steaks, I could go there and completely ignore the steaks. I probably will go back and never order a steak. The rest of the restaurant is so great that it covers up the fact that it's another steakhouse in the city. The steaks are great. I don't want to cover that up. But the rest of that restaurant is so great that it makes up for it. Hopefully, Garden Grace will be like that. I don't know much about the restaurateur or the restaurant. I know it's very popular in Denver. It's from Denver, correct?
It's from Denver.
I know it's very popular. I had not heard of it before that, but I you know, just doing a little research and stuff about it. It seems very popular, has great reviews. Some well-respected people really like it. So hopefully it's another, you know, kind of hit. Do you know how they're going to cook the steaks?
I don't.
Okay. I didn't see that. It's a 13,000 square foot
two-story restaurant with private dining space and a big patio. There's like a big green space in the Allen Center that was created as part of some renovations there. So
it'll probably be an infrared broiler steakhouse like all the other big ones.
Right. Right. Yeah, I don't see them searing them off on cast iron or anything.
Yeah,
like that.
We've had the discussion. I've had this discussion with you multiple times. I would not lambast the steakhouse that's going to open up and do a butter basted, you know, cast iron or blue steel seared steak, which hopefully is what Shepherd is going to do.
Hopefully Chris Shepherd Steakhouse, Georgia and James will do that because that's what they did at One Fifth Steak.
Yeah. Because that would be a unique preparation and a better preparation from my standpoint. So we'll see. I don't know much about it. It will probably be very successful. It's in a fantastic location for a steakhouse. that brand new Allen Center kind of park area. It's real close to, you know, Chevron Oil. It's going to be competing directly with the Shula Steakhouse that you mentioned earlier. Maybe we'll finally see Shula's close. You know, I've never met a Houstonian that actually eats there.
I've never eaten there.
So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, we'll see how that all plays out. And then finally, I do just want to touch on the news that the family that owns King's Beer House and King's Beer Garden has announced that they're going to open a breakfast concept in, you know, I'm never 100% sure if that King's Beer Garden is in Shady Acres or in Lazy Brook Timber Grove. It's right there at Ella and TC Jester, which I feel like is the line. I know that's not the Heights, that people in the Heights get very upset when you call that area the Heights because you're west of Shepherd Durham. So
what's the name of this restaurant?
So it's called Egg House Gourmet, and it's going to be a fast casual breakfast concept. They've been doing kolache pop-ups for a couple of years, so this will build on that. King's recently launched a brunch menu, so this will build on some of that. But, you know, there seems to be like a fairly, again, breakfast concepts seem to be very popular. Obviously, Snooze is growing very rapidly. La Peep has been revitalized with that new location in the gallery area. Dish Society has done very well doing breakfast. Adair Kitchen has done very well doing breakfast. So it's on brand for the King's folks to sell kolaches and egg sandwiches and stuff. And I think, you know, this is going to be a nice addition for them.
This would be like a fast casual concept.
That's my understanding. Counter service, you know, if it's a King's spin on a place like Golden Bagel, but with, you know, kolaches and sandwiches instead of bagels, then, you know, more power to them.
Yeah. Breakfast, obviously, from a financial standpoint, always has one of the best return on investments. You know, you can keep your labor a little lower. The food costs can be fantastic. Eggs are obviously very cheap. I saw that they were going to use cage-free eggs, which are more expensive, so they can trade that cost through on the price of the food. Do you know what type of kolaches? I haven't paid much attention.
So they do a whole bunch of different sausage-based kolaches. It's, you know, please don't email me with the difference between a fruit kolache and a meat kloblasnik. I don't care. I am not that pedantic. But yes, they will do sweet and savory fruit and meat kolaches as they have been doing at their pop-ups.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
So yeah. Something to pay attention to for sure.
Something to pay attention to, probably opening later this summer, and knowing the King's folks, probably the first location, but not the last one. All right, that does it for the news of the week. We will be right back with our restaurants of the week. Stick around.
You're listening to What's Eric Eating?
So, Nathan, for our restaurants of the week, I want to talk about a place that, to peek behind the curtain, we just had lunch. Feejus Barbecue, the new barbecue restaurant in Greenway Plaza from chefs Patrick and Aaron Feejus. Had them on the show a few weeks ago to talk about Feejus Barbecue. We've been following the development of this restaurant pretty closely. We've been to their pop-ups. We've talked about it on the show. But the restaurant is finally here. It's finally serving people. Nathan, I would say we had a pretty good lunch at Feejus Barbecue. What do you think?
Overall, it was great. It was considerably better than what I prepared myself for. Not to say I was expecting bad things, but it's a brand new restaurant. Patrick's using a new smoker, something he hasn't used for a significant amount of time. It takes a while to not only season a smoker, but to really get used to the smoker itself. Even I know he's using an oiler, but there's still going to be, you know, cooler spots and hotter spots and things like that. And then on top of that, I saw that they were just swamped right out of the gate, which can really just destroy the quality of a service for a small restaurant like that. And the food I had was really good. And Patrick even told us that he was worried that the food would be a little subpar, at least per his standards, because he had an issue with the smoker last night.
Yeah, we couldn't Right. He told us that he wound up cooking the briskets a little hotter and a little more quickly than he intended to. But I thought the quality of the brisket was good. It was seasoned well.
Yeah, maybe he should keep doing that.
Rendered nicely. Yeah, maybe he should. We had pork ribs that we really liked. I had his house-made boudin, which he told me is basically just the trimmings from all of the meats just ground together. I like my boudin with a little bit of livery funk to it.
It didn't have the funk.
It doesn't have that. There's no liver in it. I think he's trying to get that balance between an efficient way to use the meat trimmings and also a product that he can sell to people. I don't know if the average Greenway Plaza office worker is ready for livery boudin.
Yeah, let's be clear. He is in a food court at an office building, so he's got to take advantage of the customer base that he is here. For the first few weeks, he's going to have the hardcore barbecue people coming through. Luckily, parking's easy. They do validate parking. So if you are a barbecue aficionado, you are in the city, it's very easy to get to. You also have the opportunity to hit up Burger Chan, Rice Box. So if you're really craving some barbecue, but you got somebody who doesn't want it, it's actually kind of a perfect way to hit it up.
Yeah, the other nice thing about the Fijis barbecue menu is that they have a nice selection of vegetable sides. I know we were really impressed with the fried Brussels sprouts that were, uchi style, caramelized in fish sauce. I had mashed sweet potatoes with bananas that I really liked. You had carrots. How were the carrots?
I loved the carrots. I thought they were great. I'm a huge caramelized or roasted carrots fan. They were very good. I didn't think that it would be... I thought it was going to be a lot harder for them to do vegetables as good as they are and kind of the style that they are, but the fact that they're so busy is really helping them keep the service fresh. I sat in a position that when there were gaps in the line, I could watch, and they were really cooking the vegetables quickly and putting them out. They were going through them so fast. They had a one to two people just in the back of the spot, just redoing the Brussels sprouts and the carrots, just keeping them fresh. My wife, they have an option to where the sides are normally $3 a piece, which is really affordable for most barbecue places. A lot of these places you're paying, $6 for a small thing of mediocre macaroni and cheese. So $3 for these sides are really good. But they have they're in the Greenway office, so they have to kind of go for everybody. They have an option, three sides for $8 if you just want vegetables. My wife was one of those people who just wanted vegetables today. She got carrots, she got the elotes corn, and she got sprouts, and she loved all of it. She wasn't as sold on the carrots as I was, though she really liked them. She's not a hardcore carrot fan as I am, but she loved my Brussels sprouts. She said the sprouts were one of the best vegetables she's had in a while, and then the elotes corn was delicious.
Yeah, and if you get the three vegetable plate, it leaves more room for the peanut butter and jelly chocolate cake that basically tastes like a Reese's peanut butter cup that I really enjoyed.
It does taste like a Reese's cake. It was very moist. I don't know, is the jelly what keeps the cake moist? I don't know.
Yeah, it must be, because I didn't get a lot of jelly flavor, but a lot of chocolate, a lot of peanut butter.
Yeah, I didn't get the jelly. I didn't even know there was jelly in the cake. I just grabbed it. I thought it was just chocolate and peanut butter. It tastes like chocolate and peanut butter. Very Reese's-esque.
All right, so this compares well with other barbecue restaurants, especially for being when we tried it on the fourth day of service.
Yeah, actually, I would put it right up in there with some of the better ones. If this was going, a year ago, I don't see how this meal we had and this one little window of time wasn't top 50 worthy.
Right.
Yeah. So.
Right. Top. If they keep this up, top 10 in Houston for sure. Maybe creeping into the back end of the top 5.
Yeah, for sure.
All right. And then just briefly, you just spent a week in Vancouver and Seattle. Did you have one favorite restaurant in Seattle that you would recommend to people who are traveling there?
So let me split my Seattle into two suggestions. I had a really great meal at a restaurant called Le Messe, which is a pasta forward Italian, they call it Northwest Italian style restaurant, by, I think his name is Brian Vellinger. It is in the East Lake area of Seattle. very, very good restaurant, very produce forward, and a little seafood heavy restaurant. Very great meal, just fantastic. And then a place that I love in Seattle, it's called Maono Chicken. It is Hawaiian-style fried chicken. You have two different options. You either have their actual, you know, restaurant space, which you have to order the whole bird. They fry the entire chicken. Or you can go to Rachel's Ginger Beer in the university area, and they can get the chicken sandwiches, which is my favorite part. And you can get in a range of different ways, from either, you know, just spicy to, oh my God, this is so spicy, I need to drink 4 gallons of Rachel's Ginger Beer. I got the spicy version because I was a little cocky and I love spicy things. And it was so spicy, I needed to eat like 2 gallons of ice cream afterwards, because I had to order another chicken sandwich because it was way too spicy. But man, it is good. It's the crispiest, crunchiest chicken. So Maono Chicken for casual, La Messe for kind of you want your produce forward pasta.
All right. Very good. That does it for our restaurants of the week. Stick around, because I will be right back with Jonathan Levine from Jonathan's The Rub.
You're listening to What's Eric Eating?
Joined now by Jonathan Levine, chef owner of Jonathan's The Rub, a memorial area institution, just celebrated its 10th anniversary. Jonathan, welcome to the show. How are you?
Oh, thank you so much for having me. Yeah, we just had a 10th anniversary. I can't believe it's gone by so fast. It's just incredible.
Yeah. Why don't we kind of start at the beginning? I mean, I know some listeners are probably familiar with your story. Some people maybe not so much. How did you wind up in Houston?
Well, I had a restaurant on a few restaurants, one after the other on Cape Cod. I kind of built them up and sold them. I didn't plan on selling them, but people wanted to buy them, so I sold them. And then the last one, a place called Kingsway, was on a country club, and Country Clubs of America came in and made me an offer. But in the interim, my wife and I were separating, and I just let her have the whole thing, and came to Houston. My sister was here, and I had just moved my mom here, and I figured I'd start fresh. So,
and then how did you, because I know you started out kind of catering.
Right. The first go-around was, I was always in the catering business. We had restaurant and catering. We had in-house catering because it was rather a large facility. And then I always love it. I always love catering. That's kind of like showtime for me. And so we started that way. We had a small commissary kitchen, which we used to cater on location. And we ran that for 4 years. And then in the mini mall that we were in, there was 4 suites. And we were in one. And then the second suite became available. So I said, hey, back in the restaurant business. Here we go again. So,
yeah, I like that. The nice thing about Jonathan's is that it's such an eclectic menu. You do a little bit of like kind of New York Italian food. You do kind of steaks and chops. And then you do some kind of eclectic. You do like some Asian influence stuff. You do some seafood. How did you develop the menu for that?
In the business a long time. I'm 30 years into this, and I think I'm the oldest living line cook in Houston.
You and Robert Del, I know Robert Del Grande still pulls a few shifts on the line every now and then.
Yeah, yeah. I think he's got a couple of months on me. We're both the same age. But it's like a compilation album. So it's everything that I've done to this point. And then I really got into Houston cuisine at the time. When I first started 15 years ago, Houston cuisine wasn't as diverse as it is now, to say the least. But I got into the Southwest flavors, develop. You know how it is. You know, a chef just keeps going on. So we developed another add-on to all the other stuff, and it's so I have, you know, we call it New Houston. I have of course Brooklyn Italian, because even though I'm a Jewish guy, you know, Brooklyn is an Italian restaurant destination. And then seafood, because I was on Cape Cod, and developed you know, repertoire for doing that. So I kept learning. I'm a self-taught guy. But certainly when the internet came about, I mean, just kept studying.
And the restaurant's really grown over the years. I mean, you said you had one suite, and then you had a second suite. Now you have the whole center.
Yeah, we have the whole. It started at one, and then it's two, and then it's three, four suites. The last one is mostly for catering. So we have about 100 seats inside and 25 seats outside, which is still, you know, modest. And we have a tiny kitchen, so we can't handle that much more out of that kitchen. So with 125 seats, all, you know, on good weather days, is about, you know, where we want to be.
Yeah, and you guys were rocking and rolling for the 10th anniversary party. Lots of big parties, lots of people having a good time.
Oh, definitely. I mean, we rock and roll most nights of the week. You know, Monday, Tuesday, a little bit off, but we're cranking. There's no doubt about it. We're cranking. So,
you know, my mother and I joined you for dinner last week for the 10th anniversary. She had a Thai seafood dish with like this. It's like this curry and this bright lemongrass.
Oh God!
I mean, it was really good.
Well, you know, we have an advantage because we get kaffir lime leaves, which is the essential bringing over the top Thai thing. Because our neighbor grows kaffir limes, and he brings his lime leaves over fresh picked. They come picked, and I cook them. It's and they're so aromatic, and it's just an incredible thing. So
obviously the restaurant has expanded in size over 10 years. How else has it changed? What's different now than when you started?
Just generally the level of cuisine. You know, we don't lose anybody there. We have, for some reason, we have this environment there that not only do we keep our front of the house, but our back of the house guys have been there for years and years and years. So we've been able to develop a pretty sophisticated cuisine coming out of that place. And it's better and better and better. I'm just thrilled with the whole thing. So.
And then, I know your family's involved too.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. The my son and daughter, my daughter's been involved with me since she's really like 14 years old, back on Cape Cod, where she would organize the wait staff, mostly front of the house. And she's a take charge girl. I mean, Jessica is, you know, like my boss. I mean, she runs. And then Sam, my son, has really become a restaurant man. I mean, he's just taking hold, and he does both front and back, and he's great at what he does now. So it's beautiful.
Yeah, I know that Sam is Sam's always checking out new places. I feel like I see him on social media, you know, posting pictures from one place or checking in on Facebook at another.
Yeah, he's my spy in the mist. He's just. You know, lets me know what's going on. He just loves the whole scene, and he knows so many players, and you know, he influences me in a lot of different ways, and he tells me which ones to go to, which new restaurants to go to, and which to avoid. So I don't have much time. I mean, I'm a busy guy, so I go to the ones that he recommends, and he's typically right. There's a lot of good restaurants in this city right now.
So what's the last thing he sent you to?
Actually, we went to Helen in the Heights, and then I went to, which was pretty good. Menu's kind of small. I like more extensive menus. And then we went to Hugo Ortega's place for for brunch.
You went to Sochi.
Yeah, I went to Sochi. And it was phenomenal. And that's really a direction where I'm leaning. I'm learning and I'm studying. And in fact, I'm going to Mexico City and Oaxaca City to really beef up my knowledge of authentic Mexican food. I'm taking cooking classes in both locations, and I've been doing it on the side. That's my Sunday projects, because we're closed on Sundays. But we're gonna go a little bit in the new restaurant. We're gonna go a little bit more into that aspect.
So we'll come back to the new restaurant in just a second.
Sorry,
but
yeah.
No. Look, we gotta. I'm just trying to walk you through this in a way that will make sense to people. What is it about interior Mexican cuisine and Oaxacan cuisine that has you so intrigued as a chef?
The first thing, there's two things. The first thing is a combination of chilies. I mean, I'm using 5 and 6 chilies that I never really heard of back east. I mean, it's just amazing with the different flavors, different heat, different Scoville units. I mean, it's just an amazing array. And then the cheeses also. And then I'm a big mole guy, so I have to go to Oaxaca City because it's the epicenter of moles. So I'm going to try to incorporate those into new dishes. I am already. I've already started. I bring specials on that I've mastered, and getting rave receptions. I mean, they're becoming like our top seller specials when we run them. So
you are opening a second restaurant later this year in the Memorial Green development, which is on Memorial Drive, kind of between, I think of it as between the Sam Houston Toll Road and Gessner, kind of halfway.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
How did that come together?
Well, actually, we were in the process of kind of developing where we are. The catering space that we have now, we were going to turn into more seating, build a new kitchen. And then the Midway people who are developing that project came to us. And the CEO, Brad Frills, who I know, I cater for him. I cater for his wife, Claudia. Walked in and grabbed my arm, and he grabbed Jessica's arm, and he says, "Come with me." So when Brad says, "Come with me," I went with him. And
we should say Midway is a major local real estate developer. They built City Center. They built the new building that Kieran's is in. They've got all kinds of stuff.
Sure. And when they speak, people listen. So we went over there, and the spot where they want to put us was like, okay, where do I sign? It's the restaurant location in the complex. There's only two restaurants going to be there, us and Dish Society, which it's a great symbiotic thing between the two of us. We're very, very different. They do great food. We hopefully we'll do great food. So it's a good marriage, and it's a big space. Well, for us, it's a big space. So, about 5,000 square feet, and we're ready to roll. We're going to be. We just received our permit last Friday, and we're building right now. So,
and then I know you're working with a couple of folks to kind of help you bring the vision to life. Shepherd Ross, restaurateur. I know he did some consulting on Kieran's. He did some work for Maison Pucci Bistro. He's going to be a partner in the Bravery Chef Hall. And Linda Salinas, a very talented bartender and a good friend of mine who worked for LaGrange and Hungry's and Bernie's Burger Bus and a whole bunch of other places. What is it about those two? How did you decide to work with them?
Well, Linda came to us through our public relations connection, Marie Elgamel runs Pop PR. They know each other for years. And I just kind of haphazardly mentioned that it'd be nice to have a great cocktail program. That's really what I was after. And boom, it was Linda, interviewed her, met her. She's a friend. she's got it. She's got it. And she's going to develop these programs. She's doing drinks. Listen, I'm not a bar guy. She's a bar person. And what she's coming up with right now is just incredible stuff. I know it's going to work, and it's going to be gangbusters. I have great confidence in her. Then Shepard Ross has been a friend for years and years and years and years, and now he's getting more into the consulting thing rather than ownership thing. And in talking, he kind of came to us and said, you know, he'll help. And from that, we formalized a relationship, and he is our manager to get us open on time, in budget. And his suggestion, he's a whirlwind, that man. He knows the scene. He knows what to do. He's been through it. You know, he knows how to stick on budget. Or I won't let him change. So it's, you know, budget is budget is budget. And I just have so much love for that guy. He's like the player to, in my mind, in the Houston restaurant scene. He knows all the movers and shakers. He knows menu. He knows service. I mean, his service expectations are going to really, really help us. So,
yeah, I mean, if Jonathan's the Rub in its original location was kind of an under the radar, you know, built your reputation slowly, you're not going to have that luxury this time. You know, I think all eyes are going to be on you guys from the day you open the doors.
So how much better, I mean, to have Shepard Ross helping you? I mean, it doesn't get better. I mean, he's going to make sure that we're up and running day one. That's the object of the game.
Yeah. So now that you're kind of into the build out and the development, how is the new location going to be different than the original?
There's a few major differences. First of all, there's going to be there's going to be similar menu items, sort of our the nuts and bolts of the restaurant's menu from the original are still going to be there to some degree. But then we branch out, and I'm coming up with a name. I guess it's out there already. Pan Latino or Pan Latin. I don't know the best way to say it. Where we integrate the stuff that I'm mastering right now with my trips to Mexico and my studying true Mexican cuisine in the same kind of context as Hugo Ortega. I mean, Hugo is off the charts. You know, if I can come up with stuff that is similar and is good, wow, man! I mean, it's just a beautiful thing. But that's going to be part of our menu. You know, I'm into extensive menus. I want something for everyone. I want somebody, you know, that wants fish to have fish. I want somebody, I mean, regular fish. You have a, you know, sautéed snapper, or you have, you know, grilled snapper. And then steak, great steaks. I mean, only prime meats. We're entertaining a few different suppliers right now. We haven't narrowed it down, but top of the food chain. And then to combine that with true Mexican, I'm not talking Tex-Mex, we're talking real deal. I think it's a no-lose, and, you know, we're trying to do everything great, and we don't compromise on ingredients, get the best of the best, and let it rip. I mean, that's it, you know.
Have you started thinking about how you're going to divide your time between the two locations? I mean, obviously the new one's going to soak up most of your attention.
Basically, the way it's going to work is my son Sam is going to run the existing location. We have a great crew there. The crew's going to basically stay the same. And then we're going to, for the new place, my daughter and I are going to run it, back of the house, front of the house. And then bring on a crew there that can handle me, which is not necessarily easy, and then do great stuff. So,
all right, and then I know I've personally heard this story before, but I love this story, and so I just want to hear it again. Tell people where the Rub, the notion, like the development of the Rub, and where that comes from.
Well, you know, maybe people don't know it, this, but it's a play on words. So here we are, East Coast people, New York, Boston, blah, 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 coming into Houston, Texas, which is the home of rubbed meats. I mean, it's barbecue and spice rubs. Back east, yeah, we call them, we didn't call them rubs. We just call it spice blends. Here, everything was the rub. Oh, what are you going to rub it with? What's your brisket rub? And blah, 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 blah. So as a play on words, because my mother was a Shakespearean and still is a Shakespearean scholar, in the Hamlet soliloquy, To Be or Not to Be, there's mention of herein lies the rub. And the rub is all the conundrums in life, that questions that can't be answered. Is there life after death? Do you dream after you die? Is life worth living? The strings and arrows of outrageous fortune. I mean, so my son, Sam, actually said, well, Dad, why don't you call it The Rub? So that was going to be the original name. And then we went to Maria and Chris Pappas's house, who we cater for. This is the Pappas from Pappas. We were in the same area they live in. And I showed my business plan to Chris, and the last page was the name and the logo, and it was called The Rub. Well, Chris kind of like took the business plan, threw it on the ground, and he said, you can't call a place The Rub. They're going to think it's a massage parlor. So, I mean, that's, you know, so I'm like, shrinking in my seat. I think I got it. He loves the business plan. My numbers are right. But so Marie, his wife, Maria walks in and she says, Jonathan, if you have to call it The Rub, call it Jonathan's The Rub. Okay? I said, that's fine. Okay. I took my business plan. I said, thanks, guys. See you later. And I walked out because I didn't want any more talk about it. That was it. It's Jonathan's The Rub, and let's move on. So that's the whole tale.
So you're going to open the new restaurant, and the current restaurant's not going anywhere.
No, it's that I didn't elaborate before, but it's a BYOB joint,
right?
And it's going to stay a BYOB joint. We have great wines at great prices, and but we allow people to bring in their wines. And the concept is, we don't want them going to Specs and, you know, grabbing a bottle and putting a brown paper bag and bringing it in. That's not what we're about. We're about people in our neighborhood that have their cellars and they have their closets full of wine, and they want to bring something special. Say a Four Top walks in, and then so they'll bring a couple of bottles, and the other two people bring, and they're all top end. So that's what we're about, bringing top end wines. Corkage fee is about $20. It makes sense at that point. It doesn't make sense to bring in a spec, you know, in a bag type wine. It makes sense when you bring in a great wine that you want to share with your friends. So that's what we do. And we do have some great wines, and we're expanding our wine list as well. And they're ridiculously inexpensive. I mean, we don't do the 2, 3, 4 markup stuff. You know, if we do it, if we mark up twice, it's a lot. I don't make the wine. I mean, why am I charging people so much money for the wine? I make the food. Let me charge for the food. Okay. The wine, we do it really, really, really inexpensive pricing. And so what happens is people come in and they'll drink their wines that they brought with them, and then they run out, and then they buy our wine. So the whole thing works.
Well, very good. I think that brings me to the end of my questions, unless there's some other topic you've just been dying to get off your chest.
No, I mean, there's a lot of topics in the restaurant world, but we'll go into it.
Right. I mean, I know you have strong opinions about the current state of Houston restaurants. I don't know if you want to. I don't know if you want to expound or not.
I mean, we can go on and on and on. The one thing that gets me, let me just, is that there's so many restaurants out there where there's like 7 or 8 entrees, you know. I mean, 7 or 8 entrees, it's just not interesting to me. It's just not, there's not enough variety. I mean, people, the way people come into our place, we have 50 entrees. A four top comes in. One guy could order Italian. Another lady can order seafood. Another guy can order the new Houston. Another guy can order a series of appetizers. We have it all there, and it's all great. It's really good food. You know, this way they can really enjoy the experience. They're not locked in to find, you know, 5 to 7 entrees. I find, you know, my real opinion on it is that chefs get lazy. How can they be so into cooking 5 or 7 entrees over and over and over and over and over and over? It just doesn't seem the way to do it to me. So,
well, you save on costs, right? You got less to prep. Yeah. You get really good at it. It's not.
It's lazy almost. It's lazy. You know, do it. If you're a restaurateur, do it. You ever go to Balthazar in New York? The freaking menu is 200. And they're all good, and they have great people doing it. So anyway, that's the one point. I don't want to dwell on it and all. I can go on and on about that, but you know me.
I do. you have people who eat there like a couple times a week, probably.
Always, yeah.
Do they get the same thing every time, or do they like that variety?
We have some people that definitely order the same thing over and over and over and over again. Then we have the vast majority are the experimenters. They'll go from one column to the next column to the next. They'll ask for recommendations. They come over. You know, we have an open kitchen, so they come to me, and they say, what do you recommend tonight? I said, you know, and I'll give them my recommendation, and they'll go with it and like it.
You know? We got the lime leaves in. We're ready to go. Have a Thai dish.
Exactly. The cafe lime leaves. Make Thai dishes. Yeah. So.
All right. Well, I always wrap these interviews up with something I call the lightning round. 5 easy questions, 5 short answers. Just say the first thing that comes to mind.
Okay.
All right. Jonathan Levine, what is the first restaurant you ever worked at?
First restaurant was the Fairways. On a golf course on Cape Cod. So it was breakfast and lunch. So I cooked breakfast and lunch and then play 9 holes.
Nice. What is your favorite ingredient?
Favorite ingredient. Wow. That's tough. I'd like my favorite ingredient. If I'm going to eat. I mean, I like the Chilean sea bass. Are you talking about entree food?
I'm talking about you're the chef. I'm just saying what's your favorite ingredient.
You know, I'm not a big fish eater, but if I have a piece of Chilean sea bass in front of me, it's wonderful.
All right. Who's your favorite Houston sports figure, past or present?
Houston? I'm a New England fan. Wait a second here.
You've lived in Houston for 15 years.
Oh, man. I like James Harden. I went to the game last night. James Harden is for real. He's ridiculous.
All right. What's the first band you ever saw in concert?
Zeppelin.
That's a great Zeppelin. Answer. Oh. And where's your favorite place to get a taco?
It's a taco. Oh, man. Since I'm not a taco eater too often, but I went to the one on Kirby. What was that guy's name? Jesus.
Good Company, Pico's.
No, it wasn't Pico's. It was the guy that used to make only pizza, and then he went into tacos. God, it was good. Oh, man. You got me on that one. But it was...
You have a favorite burger? Other than yours.
Sorry. Favorite burger. Kenny and Ziggy's has got a great burger.
Yeah, the Pat LaFrieda meat.
Frieda's, that's ridiculously good. So, sorry about the taco. I just don't eat them at all.
It's all right. Where? All right. So tell us your website so that people can follow you and visit your restaurant and all that stuff.
Thank you. It's jonathanstherub.com, and we have presence on Facebook and of course, and people can find us pretty easily. So we would prefer if people do reservations that go to our website rather than going to Open Table, which is a little bit more pricey.
Right. You save a little money when people book through your website.
Yeah. But anyway, they make a reservation, it's good by me. I mean, I don't mind paying that Open Table bill. Let me tell you, when it comes, I'm paying it. So.
All right. Well, thank you. Thank you for being on the show.
Thanks for having me. That was so cool.
Thanks to Nathan Ketchum. You can follow him on Twitter at H-Town Food Junkie. You can follow me on Twitter at E. Sandler, on Instagram at Eric Sandler. As always, if you have any questions or comments about the show, you can email me, Eric, E-R-I-C, at culturemap.com. Keep it locked on culturemap.com for all the latest bar and restaurant news. Thanks so much for listening. I'll be back next week.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.